This is Fresh Air. Novelist David Mitchell is the author of Cloud Atlas, The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet, and other novels containing multiple storylines that defy boundaries of time and genre. Our book critic Maureen Corrigan says that Mitchell's latest, The Bone Clocks, is more of the same, but different.
David Mitchell is one of those writers I'd follow anywhere, even deep into what is, for me, the often exasperating genre of fantasy fiction. I don't naturally gravitate to tales about alternative universes, wormholes, or tribbles, but there are always exceptions, and if Mitchell feels like trying out a semi-futuristic vehicle about immortal soul stealers, I'm willing to take a deep breath, step aboard, and say, in the words of Rod Serling, next stop, the Twilight Zone. As in Cloud Atlas and some of his lesser-known novels, Mitchell's new book, called The Bone Clocks, is elaborately constructed, jumping around in time and narrative perspective. A friend of mine, who's also a Mitchell enthusiast, rightly says that his novels are postmodernists without all the pretentious metaphysics. What my friend means is that Mitchell's technical wizardry is there not for show, but in service to his themes and characters. He's a deeply compassionate writer. In fact, despite its experimental edge, the main reason to read The Bone Clocks is an old-fashioned one, the draw of a charismatic character named Holly Sykes. Holly opens and closes this 600-plus page odyssey into the dark side, which spans from 1984 to 2043. A self-involved and sex-addled 15-year-old, when we first meet her, Holly runs away from her working-class home in London after her mom forbids her to see her sleazy older boyfriend anymore. Appearing unannounced at the boyfriend's flat, Holly discovers him in bed with her best friend. What now? Mitchell vividly evokes the trapped worldview of a miserable adolescent desperate for a way out. A sniffling Holly takes to the road alone, where she becomes prime prey for a ghastly gang of mystics known as the Anchorites, who never die as long as they have fresh souls to swallow. What makes Holly such an appealing entree is the fact that she's gifted with what her Irish relatives call the second sight. Since early childhood, she's experienced visitations and heard disembodied voices that she calls the radio people. Fortunately, the Anchorites aren't the only supernatural travelers on the road with Holly, and in a bang-up teaser to the apocalyptic ending of this novel, Holly survives an attempted soul mugging intact with a little help from her spirit guardians. It's when she returns back to her family that Holly walks into another nightmare, one that reverberates throughout the rest of her life. Enough. It's impossible to summarize the plots of fantasy novels, even fine ones, without sounding like a Doctor Who-obsessed 12-year-old. Fortunately, beneath the big framework of his fantasy novel, the tireless Mitchell constructs other types of stories. A classic con artist tale narrated by a scholarship boy at Cambridge. A war dispatch told to us by a journalist who's addicted to the thrill of fear. And, naughtiest of all, an academic literary farce narrated by a bad boy British novelist who's bouncing from book festival to college visiting writer gig. The many narratives of The Bone Clocks are united by their unexpected links to Holly, as well as by their obsession with the theme of mortality. Here's a passage where the con artist college student experiences a vision of inevitable decrepitude in, of all places, a discotheque. Empires die, like all of us dancers in the strobe-lit dark. Look, wrinkles spread like mildew over our peachy sheen. Varicose veins worm through plucked calves. DNA frays like wool, and down we tumble. A fall on the stairs, a heart attack, a stroke. Not dancing, but twitching. They knew it in the Middle Ages. Life is a terminal illness. In The Bone Clocks, a map of a labyrinth is Holly's only defense against annihilation. As a novel, The Bone Clocks itself is a labyrinth, offering readers not a defense against death, of course, but the chance to step out of time for a while and into a world richer and stranger than most of us could imagine.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University, and she's the author of the new book, So We Read On, How the Great Gatsby Came to Be and Why It Endures. She reviewed The Bone Clocks by David Mitchell. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer today is Sam Brigger. WHYY's chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. I'm Terry Gross, closing today's show on this 13th anniversary of 9/11 with Charlie Hayden's recording of God Bless America from his 2002 album, American Dreams.